This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. It is Wednesday today. It's the middle of the week. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here with you today. And whenever you get to Wednesday, then the week tilts, and you begin to slide, the slippery slide into the weekend.
Yeah, I understand why they're saying that, because that's usually when I start to get a little bit tired.
A little worn down. We have a goal in our family. We're going to see if we can accomplish this. Our goal is to get to Friday night and not be exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
Because I hate going into Friday and Saturday and into the weekend just being just worn out. Like, yeah. I want to have some energy, so I'm not just crashing out. But we'll see if we can do that. So far, no success.
Do you have any practical solutions in mind?
Well, just the obvious, you know, try to get to bed, get enough sleep every night, and not be in a position where we're just missing out on sleep throughout the week. But it's hard sometimes. You got activities at night and you got things going on and then getting up early. So, but I don't know. I think it's just trying to manage, maybe time management would be the key. Mm-hmm. But then some weeks it just feels like no matter how hard we try, it's still, you know, not enough hours in the day to get everything done.
I wonder how much of being tired on the weekend is a result of going hard the previous weekend. Because a lot of the time, like, you have more free time, you can do more things. And I usually do a lot on the weekends, just a lot of fun things that during a weeknight I probably wouldn't do because I had work the very next day. And so sometimes if you're not careful, you're not as refreshed as you should be coming into the next work week.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah, for sure. So anyway, I think that's always a challenge in life, is to not be bored, but not have too much to do. Just try to strike that balance. So anyway, hopefully we'll get there. That's you can't cheat on sleep. That's something that'll catch up to you. So here's a story that's kind of interesting to start today. If you've flown recently or you do fly occasionally, you maybe have considered the fact that you could fly into a bird. It does happen. Sometimes it's serious, but sometimes not as serious. This one says a bird smashes into American Airlines flight, gets embedded in the nose of the plane. An airplane experiencing a bird strike isn't an entirely uncommon phenomenon, but it's much less common that the bird itself continues on for the rest of the trip.
It'll usually terrible.
Bounce off, of course.
Yeah.
American Airlines Flight 1498 from Mexico City to Miami earned this rare distinction on Tuesday after a bird became embedded in the nose cone that protects the plane's radar system. How good is a radar system? I didn't see the bird coming. They say upon striking the aircraft during the plane's descent into Miami International Airport, so it got stuck. This has happened recently as well. Most recently, Delta blamed a bird strike for causing a huge dent in one of its aircraft on October 28th after a plane carrying the Oklahoma City Thunder NBA team encountered an unexpected object in midair. So the Thunder had a bird strike as well, and in the case of this other one, just yesterday, it actually was embedded in the nose of the plane, so pretty unusual.
Yeah, that was funny a couple of weeks ago when that happened to the Thunder, because Stephen Adams was asking NASA on Twitter how they could end up with a crater in their plane. He's a really funny guy, but the picture was kind of shocking. It was just a huge dent in on the front nose of the plane.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen anything like that. I thought it could have caused a lot more trouble than it actually did. But yeah, having the bird on the front's even worse, especially when the bird's going to be going along for like a 600 mile per hour ride the whole rest of the time.
Yeah, it's amazing that happened. I've had it happen occasionally with a car. Not recently, but I think when I was younger, it might have been my parents' vehicle. I think we hit a bird, and it was stuck in the front of the in the grill.
Oh.
And you get out and you look, and you're like, "Hey, there's a bird sitting there." So it can happen. And with airplanes, of course, it can be dangerous. Sometimes they fly into the certain parts of the plane that are more important, and the engine or something. And people have had crashes because of that. So
that is a bit of a vulnerability on planes. Just the engine or the turbine, that I guess the fast spinning propellers. And so if anything got into that, a lot of the time it does bring down the entire plane. And it's almost like the plane is invincible except for when a tiny object flies in there. So it's like the Achilles heel of the plane almost. Did the bird actually survive that crash into the plane?
No, he was dead.
What about the one that hit your grill?
No, he was dead too.
Oh, so that's so I guess usually that's a catastrophic accident for the bird.
Typically, yeah, typically they'll end up not surviving that. But it's a dangerous world up there for birds. There's all kinds of things flying around. I'm sure drones now would start hit birds too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that would be a thing. I don't know if it would kill the birds, but it is possible. So anyway, thankfully no problem with that plane, but sort of an interesting story. I was thinking the other day when I was on a flight, and I don't fly too often, but about these professional sports teams like NBA teams or baseball teams. I mean, they're flying probably three times a week unless they have a homestand or something. They're flying all the time. And I have read that flight attendants, that's one of the more dangerous jobs, not because of a crash chance, but just because of the constant up and down and breathing that recycled air. It's just not good long term for your health. And I was wondering about the athletes, because they're flying as much as anybody. Granted, on chartered planes or private planes, so it's a little nicer, but still, I wonder what kind of a health toll that takes.
I'm sure it does set in after a while. At least the fact that they're in peak physical condition probably at least slows down the effects of it. And, you know, obviously when they get off the plane, they're running a lot and they're exerting themselves physically. So it's not just them sitting around after they get off the plane.
They used to fly regular like everybody else back in the day. Mm-hmm. And they would sometimes even ride and coach. Not too long ago, that was in the 80s. Because I remember Charles Barkley talking about that and saying the rookies had a fly coach. That would be interesting. I've been on a few flights before where I've seen people going through the airport. They were definitely like a college team or something, and they were flying like everybody else was. But other than that, you know, you never really see the athletes if they're professionals. I mean, they're flying. They've got their own planes these days, so it's nicer for them.
Yeah, it definitely has changed a lot recently. I was reading of one former NBA player's experience. And back 20, 30 years ago, they used to think that beer was just another hydrating beverage. And so after a game, they'd have like a case of beer and then just be splitting that up among the team. That's what they'd have after every game. They all smoked a lot, and they didn't realize that would affect them adversely with their, with their endurance, especially with their ability to breathe whenever they're running a lot. So a lot of these things have changed. A lot of the athletic training is a lot more scientific so that you eliminate some of these things that could slow you down.
Old Lakers center Vlade Divac used to smoke cigarettes at halftime. If you remember Vlade, I think he owns the Kings now. No, he's general manager of the Kings.
Yeah.
So he was from, I forget where he was from originally, somewhere over in Europe, Yugoslavia, former Yugoslavia area. So, yeah, he had a big beard, play basketball, and smoke cigarettes at halftime.
Some might argue that those were the good old days of sports, where guys just, like, showed up. They're being regular guys, but they just happened to be good at a sport. And it was kind of almost more relatable.
Yeah. I don't know how you could be a professional athlete and do that, but I don't think Vlade was ever in tip-top shape.
No. The one I was reading about was George Karl as well. I don't know how good of shape he used to be in, but definitely now he was describing in his book how, you know, you just eat pizza and drink Diet Coke constantly. You're always on the road. It's just like something that could devastate your health. And he almost died from that lifestyle. I think he's come back from it more recently.
Yeah, they've done a better job recently of taking care of their health. And a lot of them will hire chefs and things to cook proper food for them. But, yeah, that is good in that way. I think people have gotten maybe somewhat healthier in some cases there. Here's a write-up that is just indicative of the times that we're in now. It's from Yahoo today, their top story. Hate in America, where it comes from and why it's back. And it's quite a long piece written by these two authors, and they are taking a shot pretty much at white people. I mean, it's just what it is.
That was my guess before you even said, and I would also think why it's back. Donald Trump is the answer for them.
That's what they're saying, that he's empowering white supremacists. Yeah. I mean, you already know where they're going because I think the narrative is out there. But it's a long piece. They have a couple of those graphics and call-out boxes throughout the article that are interesting. All the pictures, like the first picture is of a few crazed people protesting with torches, probably, I don't know if it was Virginia or somewhere.
I think it was, yeah.
And that's a pretty small segment of the population that most people wouldn't be involved in that. But they have that. Then a little further, they have pictures of the Nazis saluting Hitler, as if there's some great correlation between the Nazi Germany and the white Americans. You can see how they're trying to put everything together. And they have this one graphic here, History of Hate in America. Racial and ethnic bigotry runs in cycles in America, they say, and evidence suggests we are now in an upswing. Attitudes towards outsiders fluctuate, but there have been spikes of outright hate. And so they go through a few time periods, and all of it is just moments where somebody was being persecuted, they think, by white people, as if there's never been any sort of hatred from any other group. So they're really beating this drum and stirring up a lot of division here in America.
It's hard to understand how people could possibly pin it all on one race when every day we see reports of a minority faking a hate crime so that they can get attention for being an oppressed minority. You know, stories like that where a lot of the driving force is not just coming from one race. I mean, it's on, as the president said, both sides. It's on all sides. It's not just one small group of people, or I guess they're trying to say it's a large group of people, all white people, even though it's maybe a couple hundred white people within all of the hundreds of millions in the country. So definitely not a sound logical argument, but you could always bring up a few examples here and there and try to say it's a huge trend.
Yeah, they're definitely going after whites. And we talked about a couple weeks ago, and it's a write-up at the Trumpet today about how they're going after the white family as well. It's a very specific attack, and they're trying to really divide the nation. It's a terrible, terrible thing. They have another quote here in a call-out box. It says, a solid majority of Americans hold implicit biases, even if they never actually act on those biases. Well, how do you know something like that?
Mind readers. Yeah.
They just know everything. A solid majority. Well, that's a pretty general sort of number. What they mean is most everybody of Americans, and they mean whites, of course, hold implicit biases even if they never act on them. How would you know that? That's just something that, again, is thrown out there like it's fact. So many of these statements, well, they're fact, but there's no truth to them. There's absolute lies, fabrications. It's not true. How would you even know something like that?
That's clearly a statement based entirely on feelings. I mean, whenever we say on this show a lot of or a majority of, we're referring back to a study or a survey. We're not just talking about our experience on the street, because that's not accurate. We haven't been in every part of the country to measure everyone's attitudes towards certain things. And so we can't just tell our readers or our listeners that, oh yeah, this is how it is because of my experience with a couple dozen people. And that's almost like that's what they're drawing on. There's no foundation for those types of accusations. And to say that it's coming from white people, when you always see articles that say, dear white people, here's what you're doing wrong, or a whole comedic sketch about how lame white people are. And it's funny to me. I think it's funny, but you would never see a comedic sketch about any other group. you can't tease anyone else, but you can tease white people all that you want to. So there is a huge double standard there. And it's almost like, you know, you don't hear anything about any other privilege besides white privilege. There are so many examples like that where white people are the only group in this country that it's acceptable to attack: white people and males. Mm-hmm. Those are the only two groups. So why are you saying that white people are the ones responsible for the hate?
They talk about a few things in the article that that they know a lot of people probably do feel, which is they address the idea that, well, if you want to be successful, you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps. That's the expression, right? So they attack that and say, well, that's only true if the people on top decide you can. Since when? Since when has that been true in America? If you've been willing to work hard, get an education, now some people are going to have a situation where they have an easier road. Some people have a tougher road. That's just the reality. And I don't think there's too many of us that could claim that we had the golden road. Most of us, yeah, we had a you know, very rarely is everything just handed to us. I don't care who you are. And you've got to work and do your best, and you have some success, you have some failure. But if you work hard and if you keep God's commandments, lo and behold, and strive to do that, you can find some good success in life. Will you be the richest person the world's ever seen? Probably not. But you can find some success. And they're trying to say, well, no, you can't. You can't. It's already, the game's rigged. You'll never be successful. It's everybody else's fault. And then they turn around and say that white supremacy says, well, all of their problems are somebody else's fault. Maybe so. I don't know. But really, how many white supremacists are there? A handful? I don't even know. They interview one, but that's one crazy guy. Just a really ridiculous article and presented like fact.
And again, we've referred to this before. The Southern Poverty Law Center, which is going to exaggerate any type of hate groups they can find to the extreme, estimates that there's only 8,000 white supremacists in the entire country. 8,000 out of 330 million people? Are you kidding me? That's the biggest threat to our society, is 8,000 people who have no support, who are roundly condemned by both political parties. The media obviously scorns them 100 times more than any other type of hate group. So how are they a threat to anyone? Even if there are 8,000 of them, how are they a threat? What types of acts of terrorism are they carrying out? Whose lives are they taking? I don't see many stories about them actually committing tangible acts of terror. They might have these feelings, but is that really going to ruin someone's life? The fact that maybe they don't think as highly of certain people as they should, is that really going to have an effect on other people?
Yeah, they highlight a very small and radical type of individual and group, but then say, well, you know, a solid majority of Americans hold implicit biases. In other words, yeah, you may not be in that group, or you may not support them, or you may not do anything bad, but you know that's who you are. That's what they're saying in this article. And everyone that's reading it knows that, and they understand that. Again, it's very divisive, very dangerous rhetoric.
Yeah, it is. And it's a shame that we've even allowed this type of complaining to become commonplace in society, to have a media that constantly pushes grievance and victimhood. The radical left does the same thing. It shouldn't be acceptable to just, whatever it is, picket in the street about made-up injustices in America. Or, I mean, obviously there's free speech, but it's not something that should be glorified, or we shouldn't be giving legitimacy to people who don't even know what they're talking about. Just complaining, constant dividing. That's what is called cultural Marxism, where you divide people into different groups and then you make them fight. That's what we're allowing to happen in this country, because no one stands up and says, look, you're wrong. You need to stop complaining. You need to get a real job and stop making your money based off of turning people into an angry mob.
Yeah, and of course, if you look at the Bible, who divides people? Who's the divider? Who's the liar? Who's the murderer? Well, it's Satan, and that's his influence, and that's what you see happening here in these types of write-ups. I did a word search just for fun. How many times was white mentioned in this hate article? How many times was black mentioned? White was mentioned, the word white, 80 times. Black, 17.
Wow.
And actually, in some of those instances, a person's name was black. That was their last name.
Oh, wow.
So they frame it like, well, hate's on the rise. But they're saying it's hatred of white people towards others. And the reality, the truth is the attack is mostly against whites. It's mostly against white males in the media. And the commenters, there's a lot of commenters on the story, and most all of them were in rabid disagreement with the article. One person says, the most prevalent hate I see today is coming from the left and the mainstream media. Another comment said, Harvard analyzed media stories about President Trump since he took office. 93% are negative. 99% are negative on college campuses. Those are the two most prolific sources of hate in America. Most of the authors and the experts in this write-up were college professors.
Well, there you go. That just shows you who is educating the next generation. It's a group of radical cultural Marxists, people who just want to see this current society collapse because they think that communism should be the way of the future. That's what the end goal of it is, and you see that because the rise of rioting in the streets, things like Charlottesville, they might be condemned, but the people who are orchestrating those things are very happy that they're happening because it is causing the very division that is needed to cause this great country to collapse.
Yeah, I hope people are savvy enough to see some of those headlines and then really think about it and make their own decisions and look at God's word about, you know, the way to conduct yourself and the way to live. And it's because it's a manipulation of everybody. It's manipulating the races to hate each other. And that doesn't come from God. That comes from Satan. And that's the thing that we have to remember when we look at those types of things. And that's why we highlight them, just because it is Satan stirring it up and getting one group to hate another group and getting all people to point the finger and attack the other group. Where's the personal accountability? Where's the accountability to say, you know what, no matter what, I'm going to try to treat everybody the right way, and I'm going to try to obey God? If we all did that, we wouldn't have any of these problems.
Yeah, and if we stopped putting our trust in a physical government, we wouldn't be so emotionally charged up about what the people in charge are doing, because it wouldn't have as much of an effect on us. If we're all living our lives the right way, what the government does shouldn't matter quite as much. It shouldn't get us outraged to where someone is shooting Steve Scalise at a Republican baseball practice, someone is tackling Rand Paul and breaking six of his ribs. And by the way, those are both Republicans who got hurt. So the attack is coming from the radical left. The messages coming out of the media and the Democratic Party are the dangerous messages, because they're causing actual violence. You can talk about a white nationalist march until you're blue in the face, but that doesn't change the fact that they didn't even start that violence in Charlottesville. They were attacked first. And yes, someone ran someone over in a truck, but it was after the attack was initiated by Black Lives Matter and Antifa. So no one even brings that part of it up. Yes, Black Lives Matter and Antifa didn't kill anybody, but they started the violence, and they reaped what they sowed on that day.
Yeah, even in the pictures in that particular write-up about the hatred in America, you know, they show the, I think it's Charlottesville, and they showed the one side, the I guess the white supremacists or whatever they were, and they're, you know, clearly engaging in some sort of a fight, but they didn't show who was on the other side. Who were they fighting? Bunny rabbits? School children?
Right.
No, another armed, vicious, hateful group. And they all want to fight each other. Now, what are you going to do? You're going to come in there and say, one of you is right, one of you is wrong? You're all wrong. You're all doing the wrong thing. And I think the president took so much flack for that, and maybe he didn't handle it the best way. I don't know. But I think he was just trying to bring out that point that there's problems on both sides here. You want me to condemn one side when you got two people rioting? I mean, if you're a parent and you come home and you get your kids, you know, fighting each other, very rarely are you going to just get one in trouble. You're both in trouble. Knock it off, right? And I think that was sort of the message that was trying to be given there, and people were outraged by it. But what are you going to do? You're going to go in and judge between the mobs? You're right, you're wrong. You know, well, you feel bad. You feel like you've been oppressed for hundreds of years. Therefore, you're allowed to, you know, throw gasoline at people and set them on fire. You're all wrong. It's all wrong. But yet, they want to highlight one side of it.
That has been one of the most confusing news stories of the year, just the universal outrage at the way the president handled that. Because how many times does one man have to condemn white supremacists, racists, before people realize maybe he doesn't support that way of thinking? He's condemned it at least 10 or 12 specific separate times, and yet they say he hasn't condemned it strongly enough, or he hasn't condemned it enough. I don't know what it would take for them to stop calling him a racist. Probably nothing, because by the way, historically they've called every Republican a racist, whether it's true or not.
Yeah, and you mentioned some of the things that have actually happened, some of the violence and things that have been more severe and just kind of out of the blue, I guess. And somebody commented on that too, and they listed them all. And there's a bunch in there, mostly attacks on the conservatives from the other side, mm-hmm. the physical attacks. So again, nobody's right in these arguments, but at the same time, to sit there and accuse one group of hate, well, the old saying, you got four fingers pointing back at you, and they certainly do.
That's right. Last night I was watching a hockey game on TV, and there was this guy in the crowd, and he had this picture of President Trump on his shirt, but then there was like the Chinese communist hammer and sickle logo, or I guess the Soviet Union symbol there next to his face on the shirt. And it just made me wonder, would you feel more comfortable going out in public today with a shirt like that that is critical of conservatives or the president? Or would you feel more comfortable with a shirt that was critical of leftism or any type of liberal leader today? You're only in danger of attack in almost every case if you're wearing, for example, a Make America Great Again hat. How many times have those people been assaulted because they have made their support for President Trump clear? You don't see anyone assaulting someone who has a Hillary Clinton bumper sticker on their car. It just, I mean, obviously the attack and the hatred is coming from the left in almost every case, probably 99% of the time.
Yeah, in this write-up about the supposed hatred in America, along with the pictures of the Nazis, along with the pictures of all these, you know, hateful groups over the years, there's an older gentleman wearing a Make America Great Again hat. I mean, I don't know. What do we know about the guy? He might be a fine person. We don't know anything about him. That in and of itself, wanting to make America great, it's not a bad thing. In particular, consider everybody that lives here. There's all sorts of races that live here. I don't remember it being said, you know, make white America great again. I think it was make America great again.
Yeah.
And I think that was the idea behind it. And two, the hypocrisy of saying, well, one candidate wants the support of, you know, all these supremacists. Well, you mean to tell me the other candidates won't take whatever vote they can get? They illegally import voting bases for their own gain. It's just hypocrisy to point the finger at one side.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to distinguish which one is worse. I mean, if it's even a violent white supremacist, you could put that across from a criminal illegal alien that the Democratic Party is obviously and blatantly pandering to. I mean, they don't even want criminal illegal aliens deported at this point. That's how extreme it's gotten. So who is really, which side is really worse? How could you say one type of violence is okay because this person isn't white, and one type of violence should be condemned because the person happens to be white? What does the race have to do with it if they're both committing equal acts?
Yeah, and that's where, you know, if people want equality, which everyone does, I think, God's law is what makes things equal. Because God is not a respecter of persons. He's a respecter of righteousness. And that's the way to view anything. Any conflict is, okay, well, are we obeying God's law or not? And that's why we have these conflicts, because neither side is. A couple of just other quick headlines here. Yesterday, terrible situation, Northern California shooting spree, 5 dead. 10 others were wounded, including 2 children. Apparently it was a conflict between neighbors or something, and it escalated. Could have been a lot worse, but that's still pretty bad. Amazing, you have 5 dead in a shooting spree, including 2 children wounded, and it didn't make the top story on most news sites, because wow, that's how used to it I guess we are. What does that say?
That is really sad and sobering, and you're right, it is happening a lot, and sadly, maybe the body count has to do with how high of a priority this type of headline would have, because the attack in New York had a lot more killed. Other recent attacks have killed a lot more than 5 people, and so therefore more attention has been given to those things.
Yeah, you know, and it reminds me too of harkening back to that other story we were talking about the hate in America, and they had this chart showing hate and everything, why don't they write an article about the Islamic hatred towards the West?
Right.
And how many times they've run people over or shot people, or, I mean, that's something you could dig your analytical mind into a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Might be a little bit of an issue there. No, not a concern.
No.
The big concern is a couple of guys with torches that I've never even seen in my life outside of TV or, you know, some sort of a situation like what happened here recently. I mean, I've never seen it anywhere. I've never heard anyone even talk about it.
Right.
Because it's so, no one would want to be part of that. But yet, that's the focus. And when there's actual violence and hatred on a large scale, that is a real threat. And that's swept under the rug.
Well, how about some charts about the rise in police being killed ever since we have had a climate of hostility against law enforcement in this country last, what has it been, like 6, 7, 8, 9 years? the police killings have gone up drastically. What about a chart that compares the amount of property damage by Antifa with those of the white supremacists? It's not even close, and yet they don't give you all the facts. They don't give you all the relevant charts and graphs to show what the actual threats are.
Yeah, in talking about racial hatred, they're demonizing an entire race. It's amazing. They're doing, and we see this all over the place, and again, it gets back to Satan's influence. You see accusations by groups that are actually perpetrating the crimes, but they're accusing the other side of doing it. And that's an age-old trick, I guess. It always happens. You accuse somebody else of what you're doing. We see that everywhere. And it's going on and on. We're going to talk about that more as we go, just with the conspiracy against fatherhood, too, that's happening. And it ties in, too. Fatherhood's under attack, and we're going to talk more about that. One other headline real quick from the Telegraph. Half of over 65s take at least 5 drugs a day. Yeah, those in England, this is where they're looking at it. If you're over 65 and in England, over half of those people are taking 5 drugs a day. And some people are taking up to 23 tablets every day. And they're saying that might be a problem. Yes, that may be a problem.
And it's easy to see why our elderly could be getting into those things. I mean, if you ever just sit down and watch Fox News for a while, that's obviously not as prevalent over there, but what are all the commercials? They're all for some sort of prescription drug, because they know that the older people watch the news more, and so they're constantly seeing ads for things that supposedly are going to heal their ailments. But then, of course, every one of them has 50 side effects, and you need to have another prescription drug to heal the side effects as well. And so it just goes on and on to the point where maybe you start taking 23 of them at a time.
Yeah, and the big problem with it is it gets to the point where people sort of forget, like the doctors or whoever they're dealing with don't even know what they're taking in some cases. And so taking a pill might have negative effects, but then if you add 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, they start to affect each other as well. And so they just keep adding these pills. And in some cases, they don't even really know what the people are on. And so you just, you know, Mr. Armstrong famously said, you know, one poison plus one poison doesn't equal no poisons. You know, you can't just keep taking pills for everything. Now, there might be some value to something here or there, I don't know, or a vitamin or something like that. But, you know, when you're taking 23 tablets, you know you're not taking vitamin A, B, C, and D. You're taking stuff that you can't even pronounce in most cases. And you're right about the news programs. Of course, here in the U.S., we see that all the time, where you watch the news and, you know, it's 2-3 minute ads just on some pill that you can't pronounce. You're not really sure what it's for. It probably will kill you, but you really need it. That's what they say.
Yeah, we've talked about it before as well. They're brilliant at making their description of the side effects almost unnoticeable, because they say it in such a positive voice. There's just a you know, just video of wonderful scenery or people playing in the backyard happily and maybe like scratching their dog, and everyone's just enjoying life. But in the meantime, the side effects are being described, and if you just start listening to it, it's shocking.
Yeah, it really is. And the expense too is so much. You know, they talk here in the U.S. of course a lot about the healthcare bill, and maybe trying to change that a little bit, and people are upset about not having health care and all up in arms. Well, what about just not taking so many medications? Mm-hmm. What would the expense drop? You know, it, not that insurance is a bad thing. Of course, you need it sometimes, but you look at all the pills and all the different things that they give people, and what if they just stopped doing it? What would happen if the people on 23 pills stopped taking them? I mean, they detox for sure. Yeah. They probably wouldn't feel good, but would they die? I mean, maybe, but maybe not. And also, if they keep taking them, they're going to die anyway.
Yeah.
And it's going to cost more. So it has so many effects, and it's so expensive to take those pills, and it steals money from those people too.
Yeah, and then that's where you get into dependence on the government, because people who are taking all those pills could definitely benefit from certain health care bills. And if you have it framed by the Democrats like, oh, well, the Republican health care bill is actually literally going to kill millions of people, well, doesn't that, again, like we said, justify violence? If you frame someone's policy position a certain way, doesn't that get back to why we see so much violence in America today, and it's coming from the left? Because that's how they exaggerate every single position of those they disagree with.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. That's the way it was framed, that if you lose your this Obamacare, you know, everyone's going to die. No one even knows what's in that bill, do they still? It was like 1,100 pages
to this day.
Something. I don't know. Make sure you stop and check out thetrumpet.com today. Top story ties into what we're talking about, too, with conspiracy against fatherhood. It's a write-up by Andrew Miller. Why all families matter. The most damaging conspiracy today is the one against fatherhood. So he is looking at that as well. And it's something that really needs to be talked about and written about because it's just ongoing. And you don't see really anybody outside of the Trumpet, I don't think, standing up for it. There are some people out there that might think that fatherhood's a good thing and they kind of want to buck the system a little bit, but in the way things are going with it, but they're not making any headway because the overwhelming crush of information is anti-father, anti-family. And I think in this one he gets a little bit into the attack specifically against the white family, which again, where is that coming from? I mean, Satan's the one trying to destroy that. And of course you need to understand a lot about the United States and Britain and prophecy and some of those things to see why he's doing that. And that's all free at thetrumpet.com. But you can see the effects of what's being done, the mind changing, the propaganda that's being spewed out. You would think the most dangerous thing in the world is the white family. Everyone be aware. Be on the lookout. You know, your very life is endangered because of the white family. That's the way they present it.
And again, if people would just step back and think about what is being said, wouldn't anyone be able to understand that a white family that is a good family isn't any different from a family of any other race that's also a good family? Why is it that only one race's good family is a threat? If you're saying that one race is too successful, but that's the way they try to say it, you need to separate the white family to release your stranglehold on society, to give up your positions of power in society. Why should it be that one race should lower a level, if that's the way they're going to say it? I'm not saying I agree with that either, but why couldn't it be that every other race could strengthen families? Why does one race have to weaken itself? That's the way they're trying to frame their argument.
And of course, if you know a bit about the United States and Britain and prophecy, you understand that God did choose Israel as a nation to set an example for people and of how to live. And he showed his laws on things and how to live. That's why it's such a shame when you see so much sin and destruction of the family in the U.S. today. And, of course, it's a real shame, to say the least. But that's why it's under attack as well, is because there's a lot of hope in a good family, no matter the race, obviously. But it's being destroyed. So look at that article today at thetrumpet.com. Really a great article, Why All Families Matter, related to that nationalizing the family. So check those out. Trumpet Daily Radio Show today. That's coming up in a bit. Your host, Stephen Fleury, talks about a few things, some headlines, and also the true gospel, again, tying into the family topic very much. Today is November the 15th, and here's an interesting thing that happened on this day in history. In 1969 in Washington, D.C., a 250,000 protesters staged a demonstration against the Vietnam War. I was watching, they have that documentary from Ken Burns about Vietnam. It's a multiple-part series. And I watched a little bit of it last night, and they were talking about some of this. But, of course, when you look at really the attack against the U.S. and the attack against just the idea that the U.S. would be in the right in military conflicts, or would the people would support the U.S. That really came under attack here in Vietnam, in that Vietnam era, where, you know, they started to show all the images on television of the war, and they started to put the pictures of the people that had been killed in the different magazines. And really, of course, it was a bad situation there and a bad war for a lot of reasons, but and not handled correctly, but still the media had such a huge effect on people in getting them to actually say, you know what, we think the U.S. is the enemy here and support the communist regimes and those other regimes. And we've seen that trend continue to where you can't get the nation to agree on anything today.
That was the golden age, if you could call it that, of the demoralization of the American armed forces and also the American people and their will to fight and to finish wars so that the outcome was satisfactory for America, not for like you say, the communist regimes, we've constantly been undermined the last 40, 50, 60 years when it comes to any international conflict we've been involved with. The media has just completely undermined it every single time. Those pictures that they show of the wars are just reality. That's what happens in a war. I don't know what they think is supposed to take place instead, but especially the people, the groups that we've fought, communist regimes, ragtag Middle Eastern bands, they're 100,000 times more brutal than we are. If you're going to put pictures on the news of the things that Americans have done, and the destruction that Americans have caused in war, why not put pictures of the mutilated bodies of the people they've just horribly tortured to death?
Well, they were talking in the Ken Burns series, they were talking to a nurse who worked there in Vietnam from the U.S., and they would obviously help the U.S., but they would also help the other side. They would bring them in if they got wounded, and they would help them. And they were trying to save the people's lives or save a limb or whatever, and the enemy combatants would spit in their faces mm-hmm. while they were trying to save them. And I did think that. I thought, well, you wouldn't see that on the other side. You want to be captured by some of those other powers and those other soldiers. It's not going to be nice.
Yeah.
The U.S. treats them much better than any other nation would have. But again, war is horrific, and but it gets back to, too, what Herbert W. Armstrong said, that, look, because of the sins of the U.S., we weren't going to win a war after World War II. We didn't win Vietnam. Korea, that didn't go well for us. We've been spending a lot of time over in the Middle East, and we end up leaving and giving it to Iran. He was right. We haven't won a war since World War II. And ultimately, it gets back to not obeying God. God said very specifically, if you continue to sin and break my laws, I'll break the pride of your power. And you see that with Vietnam in particular. And then since then, we had all this power. We could have won these battles in a matter of days, but we wouldn't do it. And so the pride of our power is broken. And this little write-up here about the Vietnam War from history.com says, psychologically, Vietnam had very deep effects. The war pierced the myth of American invincibility and had bitterly divided the nation. Many returning veterans faced negative reactions from both opponents of the war, who viewed them as having killed innocent civilians, and its supporters, who saw them as having lost the war. Along with the physical damage, including the effects of exposure to toxic herbicide Agent Orange, millions of gallons of which had been dumped by the U.S. planes on the dense forests of Vietnam. You look at the way World War II soldiers were treated coming home, and the way Vietnam soldiers were treated. One was a hero in the greatest generation, and the others were treated terribly in many cases here in their home country.
That is truly a tragedy. And again, it's no coincidence that the more we've become accepting of any type of behavior and any type of sin, the more we've just humiliatingly lost all of our conflicts. That is a direct tie that people just don't want to acknowledge. Yet, it's right there for anyone to see. We haven't won a war in, what has it been, 70 years or so, despite the fact that we've had a bigger advantage in every one of those wars than we did in World War II. It was tough to beat Germany and Japan. It shouldn't have been as tough to beat Vietnam or to win the Korean War or any of these other conflicts, like in Somalia or in Afghanistan. Are you kidding me? Those nations do not even stand up to America in any way when it comes to power. And yet, what does sin do? It cripples confidence. It cripples willpower. So when we get into these conflicts, we don't have the will to finish them anymore because we're so decadent back at home.
Yeah, there was a really fascinating sequence in that Ken Burns documentary that I saw where they were showing, they were splitting between the war in Vietnam and Woodstock. And you saw the soldiers and then the hippies and, you know, and them yelling and at Woodstock and anti-war protests and all their dancing around. And so that was the reaction of a lot of people, wasn't it? Instead of repenting and saying things aren't going well, we need to get back to God. They said, we're going to get more decadent. We're going to go to Woodstock. So, okay. So think about that. A Vietnam War killed, I forget how many it was, over 50,000 U.S. troops and, of course, quite a few others. Other nationalities, but what kind of damage did Woodstock and that movement do? How many people have STDs today? Is that a direct correlation to that, the destruction of the morals that happened there? You know, people, they're talking about Agent Orange, which is fair enough. That's a horrible chemical. But what do we do to ourselves? If they went to Vietnam and they had to experience Agent Orange, that's a horrible thing. But then at home, some people chose to put LSD in their systems.
Right.
You know, so what do we expect to happen? What do we expect to happen to the country? It really is, it's just exactly true, like the Bible prophesied. You keep breaking the laws, you know, things aren't going to get better.
Well, and how many people are parents today who attended Woodstock, and what type of upbringing do you think they would provide to those children? Probably many of them fathered illegitimately at Woodstock as well. I mean, it just, the fact that we could have such a publicized orgy, basically, and glorify it as if it's just a good old time for young people, it's just a disgrace, and God would be very upset about something like that.
Well, and look at a lot of the performers that were there, that were leading the movement. You can't talk to them about it today because they're dead early because of drug overdoses, other problems. So they look at it like, it, you know, some people look at it like it was the golden age. Well, it was certainly the beginning of some things, or the continuation of some things. And that leads us into what we're talking about today. Again, A Conspiracy Against Fatherhood, a very powerful little booklet. And, you know, you look at something like a Woodstock, there certainly was an absence of fathers there because their kids were running around. And yesterday we talked about how much families and fatherhood have been looked at through the theory of evolution. If you're looking at everything like, well, it just evolved, then why not change fatherhood? Why not change the family and mess with it and see what happens? And that's what is happening. And as this booklet points out, people have a refusal to see. Mr. Fleury writes, who is really ignorant here when you're talking about people that believe in the evolutionary theory? And then he quotes Matthew 13:15, which says, for this people's heart is wax gross, and their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes they have closed. You know, they've chosen that. At lest at any time they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears and should understand with their heart and should be converted, and I should heal them. And so Christ here is saying people won't hear. They won't even listen today. So whether you're talking about the anti-white movement or the anti-fatherhood or the anti-family movement, you can't speak to people that believe those things. They won't hear the truth. They believe their own lies, and they won't even give a moment to listen to another side of it.
Yeah, and that is one of the most maddening things when you have literally just piles of facts on your side, and if you ever get into a conversation with someone who disagrees with you and you present all the facts, you would think in a normal situation, if someone was ever open-minded, you could convince somebody. But I've seen a lot of different conversations, maybe they'd film it for a YouTube video, of someone having an hour-long discussion with a woman about how he's pro-life and she should try to present why she's not. And like the way that they just close their eyes to the truth, they'll be looking at the fetal chart, and he'll say, which part along this line of the fetal development should abortions be allowed? And she doesn't know. She doesn't know when a baby is, she doesn't know when life begins. They just try to do all these logical leaps and mental gymnastics to get around the truth. And it's one of the most infuriating things ever, because part of education is being truly open-minded. You can't teach someone who is just determined from the very start, no matter what they see or hear, to reject what you're saying.
Yeah, it's a great point. And if you look all throughout the Bible and you see that people that God has worked with over the years, they often go to God and say, can you show me the answer? Can you correct me? I don't know. And I need to get the right answer here. And that's an attitude that's very rare. You don't see it today where people say, you know, I don't know the answer. I need to see what God says about it. Can you imagine going on a talk show and saying something like that? you'd be ridiculed, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But it just shows you the type of attitude that is needed to find truth. It takes true humility. It takes an understanding of our own worthlessness apart from God. A lot of the time, God has to break us down to even get us to that point where we would ever listen to him. Just look at the arrogance today of people in the media, people in politics, people, professional athletes who and celebrities who think they have the right to lecture everybody. There's no facts on anyone's side, but they just lecture people. They're not going to hear what anyone else has to say, but they think that they can tell everyone else what to do. Where did they get the foundation of their beliefs? Why is it that they believe what they do? They don't even know, and yet they're trying to lecture everybody else.
Yeah, that's right. And then it gets back to, well, I guess ultimately evolution, like this booklet points out, where, well, we can just decide for ourselves. It says Jesus Christ had to deal with people who had closed their eyes in his day. And I mean, that should teach us a lot. I mean, here you had Jesus Christ on this earth, God in the flesh, teaching truth to people, and they wouldn't listen to him. They didn't believe him. He was right there. It says that is exactly what the proponents of evolution have done today. They've closed their eyes and their minds to any proof or belief in creation. Or like you were saying, you know, if you want to look at any of these topics, people won't look at proof. They won't look at proof. It says they have literally become some of the most ignorant people on this earth. How else can you describe a closed mind? If you disagree with them, then they begin to demonize you with ugly labels. Do we see that happen constantly? I don't agree with you. You're a racist. I don't agree with you. You're, you know, you hate women. you hate this group. You hate that group. You know, what about just looking at the truth of a matter? And again, people have closed their minds. And like it says, then they just attack you with massive intimidation. We don't see any facts coming from the media and a lot of things or any of the experts. We see a lot of intimidation. If you don't believe this, you're, you know, you need to get back to a couple of centuries ago because you're so out of date and out of fashion and so ignorant, and yet they present no facts for their arguments.
Yeah, and a lot of these issues that we're dealing with today do actually get back to evolution. We've discussed how it does undermine the family, because if God's not in charge, then we can decide for ourselves what the family structure is like, and we can get rid of the physical representation of God from the home. You can conduct yourself sexually however you want to, and 100+ million people in this country now have sexually transmitted diseases. Abortions are okay even as the baby is coming out of the womb, because, hey, if God's not in charge, we're in charge of life. We're the ones who decide life and death. We're the ones who can make that judgment. So every one of these issues gets back to not submitting to the Creator, the very being who put us on this earth, and we're just too arrogant to listen to him.
Yeah, it's a great point brought out here that it says they have literally become some of the most ignorant people on earth. And isn't that true today? Are we smarter today, or are we more ignorant if we can't even decide what gender we are, if we can't even decide what race we are, if we can't even decide, you know, any of these very obvious things, or we can't even look at a situation and make a pretty logical decision about what would be right or wrong, because there's nothing, people aren't basing their decisions on anything other than what they feel like or what the popular opinion is. And it's amazing because, you know, other passages in the Bible talk about how, you know, some people, they'll promise you freedom, but they're enslaved. And that's what you see with all of these situations, you know, freedom from family. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means you're going to be enslaved into all of the negative results of not having a family. You know, freedom to get rid of fathers. Well, what does that mean? You're enslaved into a situation where you haven't had the upbringing that you should have. You know, freedom to take drugs. Well, now you're enslaved to all the problems that come from taking drugs. Promising freedom and then enslaved by what they're doing. And we see that in every case, especially with this attack against the family, which if you look at most of the problems in society, they all lead back to not having a proper family structure.
And how much more ignorant could you get than refusing to obey your Creator, or even not even caring to prove that he exists? A lot of people just assume that evolution is true because they were taught it in school. And yet, isn't that the absolute foundation of all knowledge, whether there's a Creator or whether it's evolution? Because that decides who's in charge of what we should be learning and how we should be conducting ourselves. But people purposely don't look into that subject because it would convict them. And that's something that it seems like comes up every time. That's how people decide to live their lives. They don't want to be corrected. They don't want to be told to change. So whatever falls in line with what they already believe and the way that they're already living is what they're going to side with.
It has some great quotes in here from Herbert W. Armstrong's book, The Missing Dimension in Sex, which is free, again, setthetrumpet.com. And he says, look, there's a for every effect, there's a cause. There has to be a cause for all the world's evils. There has to be a cause for the worsening moral problem. There can be two kinds of knowledge, true and false. And he talks about just the fact that, look, can't we make mistakes as humans? Isn't that possible? If we're looking to the human mind and the scholars to be the absolute authority, what human have you known outside of Christ who never made a mistake, who didn't miscalculate or misfigure or have the wrong impression or just come to the wrong conclusion? We see it constantly. If you want to look at science or medicine or anything, it's a history that's littered with some knowledge development but a lot of mistakes along the way. Are we so sure? And as he points out here, couldn't we at least look at evolution and say, are we sure that's right? Shouldn't we at least take a look at creation and not just believe what people tell you that that's false and evolution is right?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're naturally flawed as human beings. You know, we could, waiters can get a lunch order wrong. We can forget our keys at home and be walking out the door without them. I mean, all the time we are making little mistakes like that, and yet when it comes to the big things, it's like, oh, there's no way we made a mistake about believing evolution. That just doesn't make any sense at all. It's against the nature of who we are. You know, on a test we know the answer, and yet we still write the word wrong or we misspell a word that we know how to spell just out of absent-mindedness. I mean, all these little things where we mess up, and yet somehow on the biggest thing in life, it's not even worth a second glance, because people in science have already told us absolutely that evolution is true. They haven't given us the facts, but hey, they're authoritative. They speak with a lot of confidence. So let's just go with that and never consider for one second that maybe they messed up.
Definitely take a look at that topic if you get a chance. Just evolution, and look into it. There's a lot at thetrumpet.com about it. And again, we're talking about it in relation to this book today, Conspiracy Against Fatherhood. And really consider, okay, if we just did evolve, then I guess anything goes. But if we were created, which we were, then there are laws that we have to follow and that bring goodness and happiness into our lives. And we're not seeing the fruits of that in this world today. So make sure you look at this book, The Conspiracy Against Fatherhood. We'll continue to look at that throughout the rest of this week. That's all the time we do have for today, though, here in Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us on this Wednesday. Thanks for being with myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, and enjoy the rest of your day. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.